Thank you so much, Aaron. I wanted to thank Aaron Levy for bringing us here to the Slo Foundation, and I wanted to thank him especially for bringing Kimberly, the beautiful Kimberly River Roberts, to Philadelphia to present this film as well. The one thing that Kimberly is so many things, and I think one thing that Aaron mentioned is that she's an artist, and she's also a community activist, and she has used her beautiful voice and the power of her resonant voice to speak for her family, for her friends, for her neighborhood, you know, and for generations to come in New Orleans. I want to say a couple things. I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Kimberly. We made this film I met Kimberly in 2005. The film was released at Sundance in 2008. 10 years ago, in January, we were at the Oscars, 2009. A lot of time has gone by since Katrina, and I think, tragically, I think these voices still are resonant today, and I think it speaks to, number one, the power of Kimberly and Scott and Brian's voice, particularly Kimberly's, but also the tragedy that I believe still remains with us. And I think we'll have a lot to say after the film, and we're curious to hear what you have to say, but I would like to turn this mic over to the magnificent Black Hole Medina.
Thank you. How y'all feel? Everybody okay? Everything good? How y'all feeling tonight? Woo! There you go. There's the energy I love. Thank y'all for coming out. Thank you, Lubitsch Films. And it was TLS and I did that I come. She's like, oh, you should come. I'm like, all right, I'll come out. And thank y'all for coming out. This beautiful piece of work you're going to witness launch my career. Not even my career. It kind of showed me who I was. Some people, you know, most of us live our lives every day, not even able to see who we are, but this film empowered me. It showed me who I was as a woman, showed me who I was in the world. When I first saw it at the Sundance Film Festival, I cried. I cried so much I went in labor and had my daughter at the Sundance Film Festival. Not because of the tragedy, but I cried because I really saw the beautiful person I was in my strength for the first time. And I like to thank God that I survived, but also I'm grateful for meeting Tia Lesson and Carl Dill, because they saw it in us first and say, oh, everybody should know who you are. And they put a lot of effort and energy and resources behind getting our story told. Took me on a journey, me and my family, my husband at the time, and my daughter. Took us all over the world. Changed our lives. I'm a filmmaker now because of this beautiful lady here. So I'm grateful to have her as a part of my life, and it's grateful that she saw the beauty that you all are gonna witness in this film. So make sure y'all stick around for Q&A, and we'll be back, okay? Thank you, thank you. And staying through the movie.
So, wow, Kimberly. She's a force of nature. We say, you know, it's been 10 years, man.
Yeah, it's been 10 years since we went to the Oscars.
Since we went to the Oscars, but...
But this film shot 13 years ago, 2005. Well, first of all, I want to just say, again, thank y'all for coming. And thank Lubitsch Films for putting this on. You know, still 13 years later, the story is still relevant. It's still captivating people's minds and educating people about what happened in New Orleans before, during, and after Katrina. Educating people about that community, you know, that New Orleans just ain't a place to go party and have fun, but the people have stories, and there's a story that happened to the citizens of New Orleans. I think, personally, that it's the worst thing that happened to mostly African Americans since slavery, because of, you know, what you just witnessed, that was real, it's documented. Also, Friday Films and Carl Dill, Tia Lesson, because they cared to tell the story. Like, they could have went just did the story all on National Guards and whatever. Because in the beginning, they started off shooting the National Guards until we ran into them. If you see the beginning of the movie, it comes on with us running right into them saying, oh, you know, we know exactly what happened. We just left New Orleans, and we got the footage, just eager to kind of get the story out. We wanted people to see and know what happened to our community and us and what was happening, because the news wasn't telling the truth. So I'm grateful for Carl Dill and Tia Lesson that they cared to tell these stories and, you know, use their resources, and our resources came together to make a beautiful piece that's timeless and will continue to educate people for years to come.
I think, you know, one of the questions we often get asked is how did you find Kimberly? You know, and I think the answer is Kimberly found us, or something put us together. But yeah. I think she came into the camera, but I think more precisely, she spotted us filming. Carl and I came down to Alexandria a few days after Katrina hit. The last thing I think we had wanted to do was put cameras in the faces of people who had just survived this, you know, awful tragedy and lost family, lost their possessions, lost their livelihoods. What we had hoped to do was to tell the story, to expose the fact that the Louisiana National Guard was nowhere to be found in Louisiana when the storm hit. In fact, the Louisiana National Guard had been deployed in Baghdad, thousands of them, along with their high water vehicles from the state of Louisiana that the taxpayers of that community had paid for to protect the community, were fighting George Bush's illegal war. And we heard about that, and we thought that needed to be told, and so we headed down to Louisiana to follow the National Guardsmen, and we got sort of cut off. Our access got cut off, but just around the same time, Kimberly and Scott were driving around. I think you told me that you all took a U-turn and followed us, because they knew the power of their story, and they knew that what you told us was that what you were seeing on the TV in the shelter and had nothing to do with what they had gone through.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that Kimberly and Scott and Brian and Larry, they were their own first responders. Yeah. They weren't waiting around for rescue to come, but they were responding. They were gathering their community. They were gathering their family. They were gathering their neighborhoods. And surviving and going to higher ground, and they did that on their own. That wasn't being reflected on the news. In fact, just the opposite.
Yeah.
Kimberly's community was being portrayed as looters and criminals and all sorts of really negative and wrong lies. So Kimberly had no reason in the world to trust us. In fact, she had a lot of reasons not to. And she took a leap of faith and invited us along on her journey. And, you know, we were blessed to meet her and Scott and spent a couple, 2.5 years.
Years.
Off and on. making this film. So thank you for that. And I think you bared your soul in ways that still blow me away. We were determined when we made this film, you know, to see Kimberly and Scott on the big screen, because in our eyes they were heroes of their own story. And when we tried to get funding initially, we had a lot of doors close in our face. We had broadcasters tell us, oh, people are tired of Katrina. They don't want to hear about Katrina. This was just a couple, three months after the storm. One distributor said, you know, y'all find a white character and come back to us.
I remember that.
There was like, we couldn't believe it, you know. Yeah. This isn't going to be political, is it?
That's what they asked us. So we thought, we knew how special Kimberly was, we knew how powerful the story was, and frankly, I think we were blessed not to have that funding initially, because we got to continue to film the story long after the waters receded, and long after, you know, the communities dispersed. We got to return to New Orleans, see Kimberly and Scott there, and follow, you know, the trajectory of their community. So Louverture Films came in the end, and we're grateful for that support. And gosh, it's been a while since I've talked about this film. So
also, you know, when you look at what happened in Trouble the Water, and then you think about, I mean, as of now, I'm sure there's somebody's down there filming what's happening in Puerto Rico. Happened again. Puerto Rico, though, you know. Some parts of Texas, too. And if you go New York, Sandy hit, you got some communities that still are being affected by Sandy. Wow, you know. But this film definitely was first to really, in my, that I know of, to kind of capture that experience, but to warn people, you know, about what could happen and how these communities look when storms hit them and you don't respond promptly. But this film has also changed laws too. You know, a lot of the people who did Tremé, the HBO special, the whole cast had to watch Trouble the Water before they even shot Tremé, to try to even do a story about New Orleans, to bring understanding to the outsiders of the community about what had happened. Trouble the Water was a platform for that discussion and a visual for people to see. So, and this film has changed laws too. You know, they changed the way they evacuate people in Louisiana when hurricanes come because of Trouble the Water. They saw what had happened, and I'm grateful for the mindset, the clarity of mind to hold the camera and continue to film that, you know, because of the change that it has brought America, some change at least, look at Puerto Rico, but, you know, because we did the story, we met the right people, I had the clarity of mind. And you actually, one of y'all might say, well, what made you do that? I just wanted to tell the story. Something came over me. I began filming and I didn't want to stop, because if I stop, then I'm going to leave this part out. But I was not a documentary filmmaker. I didn't think I was, at least until I met Tia. Tia was like, you made that. You shot that. Like, y'all did that. You know, if it had not been for you having the mindset to continue to film, we wouldn't have a story as powerful. So you are a filmmaker too. So she told me that. I'm like, oh, really? She's like, yeah, really. So I made another documentary, but we can talk about that one in a minute. But
well, but, I want to say, she so Kimberly filmed until her battery died,
yeah.
And then she took out her, that didn't stop her.
Yep.
She took out her still camera and started shooting MPEGs off of that.
Yep.
So when they're up in the house across the street, you know, that's footage from the still camera.
Yeah.
And I think it's also amazing that you were able to carry that across the ocean that had become your block, and without any of it getting wet. You know, so you preserve that, not even knowing if you were going to make it through, but you were determined for your footage to make it through.
I was determined to tell that story. I was determined to preserve that footage, because I wanted people to know. I wanted people to see. You know, it's like my dream is coming true. Look at you all. You watching what I wanted people to do. I wanted people to see and know and to be touched. I had desire. The desire in me was so grand that God put it all together to make it a success, to really get this story out, because I knew people needed to know. And 10,000 tongues couldn't tell what this video would show. You can't deny the story. You can't deny the poverty people were living in prior to Katrina. If you look at the before footage, you can't deny that we were not rescued. We had to be our own first responders. But okay,
all that's there, but, you know, how can we make things better? You know, how can we use this as an opportunity to see this, experience this, but make change? And some change has happened, but it's still a lot more that needs to be done. And I'm hoping that people continue to share the story, continue to look at it. It's difficult. I think people should watch difficult things sometimes because it's important to get you out your comfort zone and experience some emotion besides happiness. But look at these people. They're resilient. And if they overcame, you can too in your situation.
I think as powerful as this footage is, it was many days, maybe weeks before we actually, Carl and I got to see the footage before Kimberly shared that footage, you know, with us. But what we did see and what we did know was how powerful your spirit was, you know, and how powerful her voice was and how powerful her story was. And so long before we'd actually seen this footage that we'd heard a lot about, you know, we saw you in action. We saw you making it through, and that was impressive, you know, and we were moved by Kimberly, and we knew in that moment, if we were moved by her, you know, as a proxy for the audience, we knew the audience would be moved by her too. Yeah. So we always say we just had to make sure we didn't mess it up in the edit room, you know. but I think I want to say that Kimberly then saw what has happened to her community in the aftermath of Katrina, and she laid witness to that as well. And I think you should talk a little bit about the film that you just made.
And briefly.
Maybe can we show a little trailer from it?
Yeah.
About trouble?
Yeah. You go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, good.
We want you to be heard, Queen. We want you to be heard.
So first, this is inconsequential, but my father's side of the family is from Louisiana, but closer to Fort Polk, if you know where that is.
Yes, I do.
Okay, cool. Yeah. But anyway.
Where we were trying to get into. Fort Polk, near Alexandria.
Yeah.
That's where the National Guardsmen were returning, you know, in their when they left their deployment. And so anyhow.
Yeah. Two questions, one for each of you. We were hearing stories about the egress, like on bridges and different things like that, leading out of that part of town, and where people who lived in those areas didn't want to allow people to have access to leave that area. Was that true? I mean, community people were saying, no, you can't cross this bridge to get away from danger. We didn't want, they didn't want that there in their areas.
Yes. Well, at that time it was Sheriff, well, he's deceased now, Sheriff Harry Lee of Jefferson Parish, which is like a small town outside of New Orleans. He had his sheriffs on the highway.
Right.
That would lead, you know, even you saw the highway. Yeah, they even had a clip of it.
Right.
The cop was kind of like saying no, where the people couldn't cross. Yes, that's true. I heard it, but I didn't believe it.
I didn't believe that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes, anyway, that really happened.
Unbelievable. But my question to you is, how did you find the funding? You said people were turning you guys down, and so how did you eventually find the funding for this?
So we got a little initial money from Sundance Institute, got a little development grant. We got a little money from George Soros and the Open Society Institute, and then we just continued to do our other jobs and, you know, self-finance and good old American Express credit card. It was the post-production, you know, that's the real expensive part of the process. So as long as we delayed that, you know, delayed the edit, we were able to shoot. We were able to keep shooting. And then eventually, you know, when it won the grand jury prize at Sundance, we thought, well, there you go. We're going to get distribution. We're going to get in the theaters. We had high hopes, and we did get in the theaters. We were really happy with that. But it was a hard go. It wasn't an instant, because there was an impression that a film about Katrina wouldn't be commercial. And we hope we prove them wrong.
So first up.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. So first, this is inconsequential, but my father's side of the family is from Louisiana, but closer to Fort Polk, if you know where that is.
Yes, I do.
Okay, cool. Yeah. But anyway.
That's where we were trying to get into. Fort Polk, near Alexandria, that's where the National Guardsmen were returning, you know, in their when they left their deployment. And so anyhow.
Yeah. So I was just going to say I was getting running news because we were concerned about, you know, that side of the family down there. But anyway, two questions, one for each of you. We were hearing stories about the egress, like on bridges and different things like that, leading out of that part of town, and where people who lived in those areas didn't want to allow people to have access to leave that area. Was that true? I mean, community people were saying, no, you can't cross this bridge to get away from danger. We didn't want, they didn't want that there in their areas.
Yes. Well, at that time it was Sheriff, well, he's deceased now, Sheriff Harry Lee of Jefferson Parish, which is like a small town outside of New Orleans. He had his sheriffs on stage, on the highway.
Right.
That would lead, you know, even you saw the highway. Yeah. They even had a clip of it.
Right.
The cop was kind of like saying no, where the people couldn't cross. Yes, that's true. I heard it, but I didn't believe it.
I didn't believe that was happening. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so.
Yes,
anyway,
that really happened.
Unbelievable. But my question to you is, how did you find the funding? You said people were turning you guys down, and so how did you eventually find the funding for this?
So we got a little initial money from Sundance Institute. Got a little development grant. We got a little money from George Soros and the Open Society Institute, and then we just continued to do our other jobs and, you know, self-finance and good old American Express credit card. it was the post-production, you know, that's the real expensive part of the process. So as long as we delayed that, you know, delayed the edit, we were able to shoot. We were able to keep shooting. And then eventually, you know, when it won the grand jury prize at Sundance, we thought, well, there you go. We're going to get distribution. We're going to get in the theaters. We had high hopes, and we did get in the theaters. We were really happy with that. But it was a hard go. It wasn't an instant, because there was an impression that a film about Katrina wouldn't be commercial. And we hope we prove them wrong. HBO aired it, National Geographic aired it, and we showed it in about 300 theaters across the country.
So I think that speaks for itself.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. No, we have been very blessed to see this film in communities, large and small, and also to see community groups use the film to leverage support for recovery efforts. To raise money, to organize, to mobilize, to educate. So, it's nice to see you all here. I also just want to say, just off of what you asked, in the days after Katrina, in the weeks after Katrina, the authorities would not let the residents back into the city.
Yeah.
So even after the water had cleared,
no.
Kimberly and Scott weren't allowed back, but we as media got a letter allowing us to go in.
That's how
we got inside. And it was sort of like they needed to go. We were going. We all just kind of went on this journey together. But it was really, I think I don't know if irony is the right word, but it was like adding insult to injury that we had to take them in back to their home.
Yeah.
In those first few days after the storm.
Yeah.
But I'd love you to show your trailer, Kimberly,
for your film.
Yeah.
So we're gonna look at a trailer. You ready? This is another film, and we're gonna have to take your questions. Ooh, afterwards, the rest of y'all questions or whatever you want to say. Oh.
This is the trailer for Fear No Gumbo.
Fear No Gumbo,
which Kimberly just finished this year.
I want the people to know that in my living experience, this what happened to me, and I can prove it. Here go the footage.
Check it.
I'm a 10th grader, and I know what this is.
Yeah. I mean, education.
You went to the college, and you don't know what this is?
Thank you. right here that you fully give them the right.
The flooding of New Orleans was due to mistakes by the federal government and more specifically the Army Corps of Engineers.
I just feel hurt. I don't want you to look at him. I'm just trying to look at this and get out of here.
This is the Juvenile Justice Center and a high school on that side.
Right.
As high school, my parents are school teachers. They threaten them to send them over there if they found.
I ain't fear no man, no woman, no gumbo, no God.
They're going to learn how to be perfect criminals. The perfect criminals.
Once you get it ready, bring me the thoughts on.
I think it's really important that somebody pay attention to the institutionalized racism that made this possible.
I'm just being totally honest with you. I'm gonna run a lot of these people out of my community.
$35 a pop. That's all my pictures on there, maggot. Oh, that's my shit. That's my fucking blood on this shit.
But the wind choked, the cat spoke, and you
one,
lost your
two,
mind.
One, two, three, go!
The yeah, that's a trailer from my new film called A Fear No Gumbo. It's a documentary about a young lady, who is me. Yes, I'm still a young lady. A young lady who go on a journey with her daughter trying to change the community politics that have held the community down in order for the community to be a better place for her and her daughter to stay. It's really the follow-up to Trouble the Water. It's really a journey of me, my daughter and I going through the community, kind of talking to folks. It's not like a talking head documentary, but really showing what's really going on. And it's kind of like documented what had happened, like what happened after Katrina. Y'all saw Trouble the Water, but Fear No Gumbo really showed not all of it, but some of the stories that had happened to the community, especially the Lower Ninth Ward, about why they didn't recover, why the community is still 80% of the city recovered, but the Lower Ninth Ward is still the only community on the Gulf Coast that's 13 years later still has not recovered from Hurricane Katrina. That film kind of embodies that. So. I went on a journey. First of all, I had to ask Tia. I was like, you think I should do this? And she was like, Kim, you could do anything you want to do. You want to do a documentary for you. You want to do this on your own. If anybody could do it, you do it. So that gave me the rocket fuel for my rocket ship to take off, for me to do what I really felt I needed to do. And that's continue to tell that story of what happened to New Orleans and the Lower Ninth Ward after Katrina. Fear No Gumbo has won Best Documentary Prize at the Hip Hop Film Festival in Harlem. Yes.
Woo!
We also won the, last week, at the Hot Springs Film Festival in Arkansas, we won the Rising Star Award. So far, so good.
I think, can I just say, you're also forcing accountability. You're not just documenting it, but you're like in people's faces forcing accountability in a way that nobody can do it like you. So yeah, anyhow.
It's a powerful film. But so look out for it. I mean, y'all can see the trailer. I also did the soundtrack. Look up the Fear No Gumbo soundtrack on YouTube, and you can check out the music. I did the soundtrack for Trouble the Water too, most of the music, so you can look that up. Trouble the Water, Black Co Medina, Queen Co Medina, my music and my film, my stuff is out there also. So yeah. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you very much for that wonderful film. I watched it many years ago, and it's great to see it again. I want to ask about the title, about the song, Wading the Water and Trouble the Water, what it means to you and what it means to people in the Lower Ninth Ward.
Well, the song, Trouble the Water, the title came from the actual song. Everything was in the water. It was perfect when Tia came to me and was like, this title here, what you think about, I'm like, Trouble the Water is perfect for the film because it's a description of what happened. God's gonna trouble the water. There's joy, there's peace, there's deliverance, there's healing in the water. a lot of that happened because of the storm. Like, New Orleans was liberated in a lot of ways because of the storm, because of Hurricane Katrina. People got opportunity to go to different states and get better jobs, get better school, and better opportunity to be, to live the American dream because of Hurricane Katrina. So that the song Troubled the Water, well, Wade in the Water, definitely was perfect for the title to be Troubled the Water, because the song, which is also in there, resonate with the song, with what we was trying to show. You know, it was a liberation. Even for me, I was able to see myself, the woman, like that woman on there. I'm like, I hope I'm still her. She's bad. Wow, she's a lot. She's strong. She's smart. And I forget at times that's me. I hope I'm still that beautiful woman. But if it hadn't been for this film, maybe I would have saw myself in another way. But this film definitely showed me who I was. This film empowered me. You know, it encouraged me. It helped me to see myself in a way that at the time I did the film, I couldn't see none of the things, you know. And just having, you know, someone like Tia on the journey with me, like put me under her wing, and she just like taught me so much. Not just about film, just about life, like who I was as a woman. I'm like, why you did that? You didn't have to do that. You could have took somebody else. But you picked me and traveled the world with me and showed me about what was happening. Like, I was kind of trapped in my community in that film. I didn't need, like, I was kind of like stuck in this room. That's all I knew was New Orleans and our way of life. But just being able to travel with the film and talk on panels and really, you know, express myself and meet people, and this film did a lot for me, you know, so I'm grateful for the opportunity to just have met some beautiful people and be able to get the work out, you know. Anybody else?
During the time that after Katrina, were you on Democracy Now?
Yes.
There was another gentleman who spoke as well as you, and he kind of, whenever Amy would go back into New Orleans, she would also interview him too. Do you know who I'm speaking of? In the Ninth Ward.
I think
he was older than you.
Older guy, yeah. His name, the guy I'm talking about, he was a resident. He had lost his house. He got interviewed a couple of times on Democracy Now. His name Errol. I think Errol Williams.
Yes.
Yeah, him. He finally got his house built. Like, I think like last year, he finally got in his house after all those years. Finally, because he got ripped off by the contractors. He was coming in and telling people he was going to help fix the house for the road home money, which was the grant money, and he was running out with people money. And he just finally got his house fixed. So we talk about the same guy. Yeah.
Yes, I remember the first name.
Yep.
And I commend you because you're so down to earth. You articulate so well, you're so down to earth and real. It's like we can believe what you say as opposed to the politicians that we were listening to, that I was, and thinking, especially someone being black mayor, who, you know, would think that he was for the people. And he just seemed believable, and there was nobody else representing that area. So to see you and your friend on Democracy Now! Was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, and I'll say something about that Mayor Ray Nagin. We were invited to show this film at the Democratic National Convention in, where was it, Minneapolis? Denver?
Denver, Colorado.
So we all traveled out there, and the organizer invited Ray Nagin, who was going to be at the DNC, to introduce the film. Now, he hadn't seen the film yet, and I thought, well, that's maybe not the best idea, but we weren't willing to send him a link, and, you know, they just did whatever they wanted to do. So I think Senator Landreau was there, and Ray Nagin. And so Kimberly, for the very first time, had the opportunity to meet the mayor of her city there in Denver, Colorado. And it's, I think, a pretty unforgettable encounter that, at least hopefully unforgettable for Ray Nagin.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a clip of that. We show some of that in Fear No Gumbo, which is going to be, maybe, hopefully we can get a screening here soon. We're going to work on that. to bring Fear No Gumbo to you. I would love to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that clip is, it was documented, and it's part of the story of just addressing the mayor about the condition of the city before, during, and after Katrina, and wanted to find out what you're going to do about this here. And I'm not going to be a spoiler, but he didn't have too many answers. And he also got convicted and went to sentence for 10 years in jail for in prison for bribery. You know, the same mayor that you saw up there after Katrina, they went in and got that money. And it's all about friends and politics, and then the feds swooped in on them. But, you know, that's what you get when you forget about the real citizens, you know?
Me? Yes.
Ain't no telling what the Lord got for me, baby, probably. I mean, if the
Because I know your mind is like churning constantly about new projects or whatever.
It is, but I try to focus my energy on one thing at a time. So right now, we definitely pumping that Fear No Gumbo. So y'all going to, you know, go on YouTube and check out the clip. Also, you can go on fearnogumbo.net, our website, and see some of the work we're doing. If you know some friends that can help out in terms of donating and helping us perpetuate the film and continue to get it out, have them to give us a donation so we can get the word out. But it's definitely coming to Philly, bringing Fear No Gumbo here.
And what, you know, one of the things about, I was going to get back to this question about Trouble the Water,
yeah,
is a lot of people just, their only association with New Orleans and music is jazz.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's just it. And as beautiful and powerful as the jazz tradition is, you know, bounce is a very powerful, homegrown, yeah, musical form that is extraordinary, yeah, and important in the lives of folks in New Orleans.
Yeah.
The gospel spiritual version of Trouble the Water is also in the film.
Yeah.
So we've got the jazz version of Trouble the Water as played by Dr. John. We've got, yeah, Kimberly's version of Trouble. Well, it's not really a version, but it's inspired by Trouble the Water.
Right.
In the end credits, you know, which is just extraordinary. If you listen to the lyrics,
yeah,
I encourage awesome. You listen to them two or three times. They're just, you know, pretty powerful. They knock a punch. And then we've got, I'm sorry, what are the gospel singers' names?
Mary.
Yeah. In there. And then when Carl and I knew, you know, and we got Kimberly and Scott's blessing to call this Trouble the Water. And yeah, then people are always saying, well, how do y'all know when to finish a film? And, you know, you can keep shooting for a very long time, right, Kimberly? But at that protest at the very end of the film, at the civics, at the City Hall, mm, when that band broke into Wade in the Water, we were like,
yeah,
we are done.
Yeah.
Like, it's good. It's, it was sort truth of like a sign from heaven, like, you are done.
Is it?
So, anyhow. Other questions, thoughts?
So, mine is a question.
Mm-hmm.
The first is a comment. So the first comment is more of a thank you. only because a lot of the time people are very disconnected to stories like this because they don't see what actually happened.
Right.
And when you see that personal perspective, it's easier to have empathy and kind of place yourself in those shoes and see how much more real it is. So
yeah,
I
absolutely
definitely appreciate the film. I was surprised by, I guess maybe it's because it's a documentary. You seemed very organized in how you got everyone out, how you guys took action instead of just, like you guys were speaking before, just sitting around. I'm guessing that the thing that I was trying to figure out is for the community, for your background, do you think your street smarts kind of played into how you approached the situation and how you looked at the situation that you were in? Because a lot of the time it's not about what happens to you, but how you react to it. And I'm kind of surprised that you guys were able to pull through as much as you did without being given resources, but finding them for yourself.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean, you know, you gotta have something. I mean, come on, if you don't have a great education or you come from a broken background, you turn into a survivalist. You know, the brain is built on, we have to survive this earth. So if you don't have tools, then if you can't sing, then you a dance. If you're not an educator, you may be good with your hands. Life have a way of giving us what we need. You know, the universe, no matter what we lack, we still going to be strong in some area in some form of or another. So even though I come from broken schools and come from a background in which my family structure was broken and dad wasn't there, mom had died, I grew in other ways. You know, so yeah, it turned me to a survivalist. So, and then I had the willpower. I was a strong-willed person, and I was determined. If you look at that woman, she's a determined woman for whatever, determined to help people, determined to tell the story, determined to change her situation. So it was easy for me to let the filmmakers come along with me for 2 years because I was determined to get out of that some kind of way. I was determined. So if nothing else, the film just proved to me and I hope other folks see the self-determination, how powerful that is when you determine. I don't care what they tell you, what they take away from you. They can take your mother away. They can put you in a cage alone. You will find a way to get out if you determine. So that self-determination just shines so bright. And I'm proud of myself to be in that self-determined. And it's just powerful that. It's just proof. If you're self-determined, no matter what you lack, that's nothing. You're strong. God, the universe, still will build you up in another way and make your life happen. But it's what do you want out of life. And to me, I wanted to change my situation. And I wanted people to know my story. And same thing with my new film. I wanted people to see the story, know the story, and hope that they can be inspired to do something and be self-determined to just do it. You don't need the budget. Just do it. The elements will come, the universe will come, everything will come to your rescue if you just be self-determined and just willing by any means necessary to put your all into what you believe in. I mean, the universe is going to have to bow and give you what you ask for eventually, you know?
And you could have easily, though, just use that determination and get the heck out of Dodge, but what you did was you lifted other people up and into the attic and across the street and down the street, and I mean, you had a truckload of people with you, literally.
Because we were determined not to leave nobody behind. Not on my watch, you wouldn't go die. Not today. And no, today not your day. Let's go. Let's roll. And we roll, and we got them out. And that's one of the highlights of my life, you know, that I lend my youth to help people. Lend my back, lend my hands to help people that I didn't even much know in the time in which they needed help.
I think it's so powerful to see that in this moment politically, you know, in this Trumpian moment where it's all about, you know, our leaders are all about, you know, their own self-interest, you know, and saving their own asses. And it's all, you know, it's just the opposite of that. But you also look at the government failures that are shown in this film, and this is before Trump, long before Donald Trump came around. Yeah. You know, those levies, you know, were faulty, and the government allowed that to happen. The Clinton administration, the Bush administration, long before Trump. So, I think it's also important to remember that these are endemic failures that need to be addressed, and. We can't address them by running away from them.
Right.
The government is supposed to protect people.
Yeah.
And we got to make sure that happens. So.
Any more questions or anything? Comments? How about you, young lady in the back? Then we'll come back to you, Queen.
I just have a comment. Yeah. I'm just wondering if you came into contact with any of the people that you were on the truck with.
Yeah. Those people, a lot of them, some of them moved back to New Orleans after Katrina. You know, you have this connection with them to know, hey, we survived the tough time together. You know, you living your life doing you, I live mine, but we always love each other because we could never forget that day, how we came together and helped each other. And this is it. You know, we know it in our hearts. We support each other. And we love each other, and we'll never forget that we survived in the worst times together. And their memories are our memories because we couldn't forget it. We all have recorded the same experience. This process is probably different, you know? How about you?
I guess my comment is when Scott said that
I forget the gentleman's name that you guys took along, I think Brian or something,
yes.
That how they were enemies before the storm and then they became like brothers. But my comment before even saying that was many great lines in that film, yeah. But one that really made me chuckle was when you said, I'm 24, you're 69, but I'm the big sister.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I didn't know I was touching people like that. I didn't know I was being a role model or helping people the way I was helping people. That touched me. That made me cry when I saw that scene we're talking about. I was like, wow. You know, I was helping people. But, you know, I wasn't thinking about being a hero. I didn't even think I touched them. I wasn't even think I was helping them. So he said, what do you think you was doing? I didn't give thought to what I was doing. I just was living my life until I met this lady here, and she showed me, she told me what I was doing. I'm like, really? So y'all are heroes. Really?
We just held the mirror up to her. And
really?
And I think one of the...
And it empowered me. It made me feel good to know, yeah, man, you're doing something good. And it made me want to do more because I saw that how it looked when you do good. That's how you look when you do good.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Especially when you're not even, that wasn't
your purpose. No, I'm thinking about it.
She wasn't doing it for the camera.
Yeah.
She wasn't doing it for the camera. And I'm happy to say that when Kimberly came home after this film premiered at Sundance and after the Oscars, I mean, she was embraced as this hometown hero. And yeah. She was, what, you were you were up at the Mardi Gras parade, you know.
I was the queen of music.
Queen.
The city honored me for the work I did.
But not necessarily, you know, before the storm, they might not have.
No,
you know,
no, I was nobody. Yeah. I was a nobody. Yeah, I was, but.
But you've also, a lot of, one of the things that touched me as we took this out on the road was seeing, you know, young women and little girls and people of all ages and races, but especially young women and little girls touched by Kimberly, you know, and inspired by her, and seeing her through their eyes, to me, you know, was one of the most touching things about watching audiences watch this film.
It's been a beautiful journey, a magnificent journey. Just with the story and just continuing to share it and get it out. And yeah, it's been beautiful. I'm grateful. Yes.